He gave an interview yesterday to the Press Association, the first time really he's sort of broken cover, in which he largely defended the science and the integrity of the data. He regretted the loose language and the tone of some of the emails. He's pretty shaken up by the whole thing. He describes it as the worst few days of his professional life. He's had threats to his personal safety. He's had to pass those on to the police. But he isn't going to resign.
What do these emails tell us?
They're one of those things that tells you pretty much whatever you want to see in them. I mean, there's so much of them. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of emails. And I would challenge anyone who had that kind of a collection of their own email correspondence not to be liable to all sorts of accusations if they were made public, because they're not intended for a public domain. So they're written in a way which is personal and private and flippant. And, you know, we all do it, don't we? Well, I do. I think what it shows is it shows us a little bit about how scientists work in a very raw form. So we don't see science in the polished form that we usually see. We don't see it in their rigorous, careful language. We see it, scientists as people, as bitter people, as jealous people, as rivalries, as annoyed and irritated and competing for attention and all of the things that anyone who...
As human beings, really.
Precisely. I think there is this sort of impression of scientists as being cold and functional and detached, because that is the way that science is. But that is not the way scientists are, of course. I mean, why would we expect them to be like that? They are a community like any other, and there are, you know, lively scientists and quiet scientists. There are some scientists who perhaps stretch the limits of what they can say in the same way as some journalists perhaps do that.
But does the content of these emails change the science of climate change?
I don't think it does. I mean, the sceptics are claiming that, but the sceptics are mainly focusing on this very ambiguous statement that, I can't remember, it's something like, I have done the trick to hide the decline, and it's talking about a manipulation of data. So that looks really damning, but what people haven't really, I think quite deliberately, haven't really explained when they've used this as a weapon to attack climate science, is that what they're talking about there is tree ring data. It's one of these really arcane data sets that way back before we had thermometers, as a way of reconstructing past temperature, you can use things like tree rings. I don't fully understand the science, but presumably, you know, trees grow faster in warmer weather, or so the tree rings are, I don't really know. But anyway, they do it. And it's been quite useful. It's been quite sort of controversial, but it's been relatively accepted as a science. But then in the last 100 years or so, we've had thermometers, so we know what the temperature is. We don't need to use tree rings. But what they kind of done is they've taken the tree ring data and they've extended it through the 20th century while we've had thermometers. And they've shown that actually it's a pretty good match until you get to about 1960 when something very strange happens. And they don't know why this is, but for some reason the tree ring data, while it should be showing an increase in temperature, is actually showing a decrease in temperature. Now, they know there wasn't a decrease in temperature from 1960 onwards because they've measured it all around the world with thermometers, which are very reliable. We know the temperature has gone up. For some reason, the tree ring data shows it goes down. It can look suspicious, and maybe I'm too close to this. You know, maybe it does take someone who isn't involved with this to say, well, hang on a minute, there is an issue there. But as I understand it, this is not a concealed manipulation of data. This is out there. The scientists say, look, for some reason, something goes wrong in 1960. So what we've done is this.
They're adjusting it to take into account.
Exactly. And now in the email, that's described as a trick to hide the decline, which looks quite damning. But I just don't think, if you look at the context, that it is.
How much damage has all this done to the public understanding of climate change?
About that, I'm at the sort of end of the spectrum that says, look, this is the kind of stuff happens regularly, you know, and actually the sceptic and denial industry is a lot less influential than it used to be. And then there are others who say, but the rise of the internet and it's all more accessible now and if stuff flies around the world and has influence. And you know, we're at a very sensitive time because we're trying to get agreements in the US on climate change and also around the world on climate change. I think the influence on the public is probably greater than the influence on what I would call the people who actually make the decisions and have the power. So the politicians, the big corporate guys, they all seem pretty solidly behind climate science, if you want to call it that way. Public, you know, I can see why there is confusion. And I think part of the reason is that climate change happens slowly. And we in the media are partly responsible for building up an impression that it's an imminent threat, an urgent threat. And for some parts of the world, perhaps it is more urgent or more imminent. But for most of us in Northern Europe, it isn't an urgent and imminent threat to our livelihoods and to our way of being. And I think there is a... We've created a bogeyman and we want to see him now. And so we do rush to perhaps see climate change in things where perhaps there aren't. And also we have built up this idea that the temperature is increasing all the time and each year is hotter than the last. And it doesn't. Climate change does not have to work that way. I think this is a subtlety which is misunderstood quite easily. And I don't blame people for misunderstanding it because it is quite difficult. But let's just, if we've got time, just to say, for example, a 5-degree temperature change by the end of the century would be disastrous. Now, that's between now and the end of the century, that's roughly 0.5 degree every decade, or 0.05 of a degree each year. Now, that kind of an increase is very, very small, and it's easily swamped by natural variability, a warm summer, a cold winter, whatever. And so the point is you do not have to see the temperature get warmer year on year on year on year in a sort of stepwise fashion. You do it based on averages, and the average temperature is increasing at the moment, whether this year is slightly colder than the last or not. It's a subtlety, and I think we are partly to blame for not accepting that and for not explaining it properly, because, as I said before, we do rush all the time to vindicate all of these stories that we've written about climate change.